Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm your host, Summer Brooks, and today we're going to get into a couple of different interviews about the behind-the-scenes makings of a movie, specifically the sound design and the film editing for Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. And we have interviews with two sound editors on the movie, Dashan Naidu and Brett Killoran, and the film editor, Dev Singh. So here we are with those interviews right now. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me right now are members of the sound design team for, among other things, Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, Brett Killoran, who is a mixer, and Dash Naidu, who is a sound design supervisor. They are part of the team that make up the sounds that scare you, startle you, creep you out, excite you when you're watching movies. And their latest project was Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. Welcome, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
I am a fan of sound design, especially in genre films, horror, science fiction. The sound, to me, makes up so much of the character of the movie. And it's, to me, the design of what you're watching is just as important as the soundtrack. So the kind of magic you guys make is, for me, is a fun part of filmmaking. And I would like to find out more about what you did for this movie and go from there.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Summer, I as you say that, a question pops in my mind for you. Do you have a favorite sound design moment in a movie or TV show?
Some of the special effects that were done in Babylon 5, some that were done in The Witcher, the very first horror movie I saw in theaters was Jaws. I did not realize how important that was, what I heard on the theater screens, until so many years went by and only seeing it on VHS or reruns on TV, until I got the anniversary Blu-ray that came out a couple years ago and I went, oh, I forgot about this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A lot of those that we revisit and it's like, oh, how did I miss this?
Yeah, it's like
I enjoy this.
Yeah, you watch a favorite movie on a more advanced sound system and you hear these little other sounds like over your left shoulder where something's about to come running out, and off to the far, far right in front of you, where something's happening and you didn't realize that the actor was reacting to that sound because you couldn't really hear it as clearly as they were supposed to be indicating. You're like, ah, I want better sound all the time.
And it's a great segue, because we really do live in that minutia of creating that immersive experience that, you know, Brett more specifically as a mixer, you know, he uses that surround sound space to immerse people in that environment. So for us as sound designers and as mixers, we love it when people go to movie theaters or watch it in the formats that we intended it to be mixed in. So you can have that full experience.
So what for you is it like to design those sort of scenes where you don't just have the audio for what's happening on the screen, but you've got the background sounds that make up the atmosphere that you're trying to set for the viewers?
Yeah, it's a real, you know, it's a trial and process, not just with the director or the producer or the picture editor. It's a trial and error process with myself, because when we have those moments where you know, for example, in Resident Evil, you know, there's this shot of like an infected crow that smashes into the window and falls onto the ground, and it's sort of transforming or going through this transformative stage. And, you know, for me, there is no sound attached to that. There's no what we call production sound that's usable in that moment. So I create everything from scratch, from the rain to the crow, the pain sounds of a crow mutating into something else. So yeah, it is a real trial and process. I might go through two or three versions of it till I make myself happy with what I've come up with before presenting it to a director. Or I might give the director those two or three versions of what I did, and to see or gauge their reaction. Because like I was saying, as a sound designer, I'm stuck in the nuance, the nitty gritty, the frames, the sort of minutia of it all, that, you know, to have options for people to look at is way more valuable to me, and the process of coming up with the best idea for that sound.
So Dash, you are coming up with the actual texture of the sound, and Brett's job is to mix it in with the existing sounds to sort of enhance what's going on. Is that right, Brett?
Mm-hmm. And in a movie like this, there's not many existing sounds. Everything you hear would have been made by Dash. So yeah, Dash makes the sound of that thing happening off in the distance, and I'm the one who puts it physically to the right so that the audience feels it coming from the side. So Dash, you know, assembles all the pieces, and I kind of put it into the speakers or in the ceiling above us. And that's where we had a lot of fun in the mansion scenes of Resident Evil, really making it feel like there was many floors of zombies behind you and above you. And, you know, Dash would give me those elements and I would have it run across the ceiling kind of thing. Yeah, it's tons of fun.
Now, is your task, your job, a lot of pick and choose or testing out? Because you're like, okay, will this sound work here? Does this give me the sound that I'm looking for? Does this create the little sub current of dread that I want for this scene?
Yeah. Sorry, Brett, you can jump in on that.
So Dash would have it, you know, 100% of the way there. And then when we get into the mix, usually there's two mixers. One handles the dialogue and music, and the other handles effects, Foley, and sound design. And I did the effects side on Resident Evil. And then there's a lot of, you can't really tell how it's all going to play until you're in the room with everything, you know, because everyone's working with temp versions of dialogue, temp versions of the score. But then when you get the scene all together in the room and everything's at full volume, that's when we begin to really see what's working, what's not. Is it something I fix in the mix? Is it something Dash gives me extra elements for? And that's kind of the process through mixing. And it's a lot of trial and error and a lot of, you know, no one knows how it's going to sound until you do it. And did it work? Yeah. Did it work this time? No, not quite. Not so much. Let's kind of revisit.
Oh, nice. I, you know, full disclosure, I have an interest in doing, or just how, finding out how these soundscapes are created. Mm-hmm. Cause there's a theater company in Chicago called Wildclaw Theater Group. And they had, well, pre-COVID, they had a contest every year where they would put on 10-minute radio plays. You know, the top five that were submitted during the year, these 10-minute horror radio plays. Mm-hmm. And in addition to them being acted on stage in front of a live audience, they were doing live Foley.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Yeah. And like listening to the recordings of some of those is incredible. And every year I talked to the Foley people, it's like, what noises are you looking forward to making this year?
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun, and just hearing how they also go into great details. Okay, well, this is the sound of a bone breaking, this is the sound of maggots chewing on flesh, and and it's just so delightful, because I think it took me a long time. Like, I've been a horror fan for a long time, but it took me a while to realize just how much painstaking work went into the sounds, because it's mostly the sound and the music that gets you all amped up and scared and everything in the movie. So that, you know, I just have a fascination with how that's all created, and you guys are doing some fun work. If there's something new coming up, you can talk about, would you?
Oh man.
You know, it's funny, I think Brett and I might be attached to the same thing that we both we are both, but I think it lives in the sort of horror fantasy world, Brett, something yep. in that nature. Yeah. I have yet to see yep. a cut of it, but I think that's where it lives.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, an extension maybe of what we were pursuing with Resident Evil, going into that, it's you know, our brains are at least in the same space still. We're not too far removed from it.
Okay. Well, how about this for a question? Both of you have worked on recent Guillermo del Toro projects, even though they're separate. You know, Dash, you were on Shape of Water. Brett was on Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Did you actually work directly with Guillermo at any point in time?
Brett, you want to start?
I can start because I didn't. my specific role on that movie, because he produced on that movie, but he didn't direct. So he mm-hmm. wasn't involved in the day-to-day. And he did come in a couple times, but because of my role on that movie, I wasn't there during the days he came in. So unfortunately, I haven't gotten the opportunity to work in the room with him yet, but hopefully one day.
Yeah, for Shape of Water, it was, I was a support editor on that. So it was Nelson Ferreira and Nathan Robitaille who supervised that film. But I was on through the mix, and he was pretty big in the mix. He'd come in and out and spend days there. And it was actually really, really mind-blowing to watch him orchestrate sounds into a world. He's just as knowledgeable as we are in the craft, and you don't see that a lot. So it made the process really sort of magical, for, you know, lack of better words. It was to be a fly in the wall making that movie was fantastic.
Nice. Did you pick up any tips or tricks from watching him work?
I don't know if I picked up any tips or tricks, but I think I was just in awe that often the word maybe didn't really live in his vocabulary. He was very confident on what he wanted. He just knew. He understood layers. He understood composition. He understood how sound effects works in the grander scheme of everything else. What needs to be played? What doesn't matter for this scene? What does matter for this scene? When it's a sound design moment, when it's a music moment. And to, like I said, that's not always the case, and Brett can attest to that. I mean, there's, you know, directors and producers, they're so different across the spectrum when it comes to their decision making, and it's all great and it's all good. I mean, I can tell you on Resident Evil, Johannes, the director, probably gave us the most freedom in a mix that I've seen in my career so far. And I'm sure Brett would agree with that, to have someone come into a room and go, look at a scene and go, can you just make something that you guys are happy with? Something interesting. It just has to be interesting. Walks out of the room and then comes back 5 hours later to watch what we did. That's what made that mix of Resident Evil so much fun. Because we just got to play.
Nice.
And he liked the ideas. He would, you know, sometimes that happens and they, you know, you come back and you didn't quite get what they had in mind, but he didn't have anything in mind. He, you know, he did his work by shooting and doing everything that led up to it. And it was our turn. He looked at us as the collaborative professionals and we had all worked together before. So it was kind of, he just trusted us to be able to do what we do, which was amazing.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool. Like he trusted you to get him to a spot where he could say, okay, I need more of this, less of this, go.
Yeah, it's funny, like I said, watching different directors approach their direction of how a soundtrack should go, because he was very much like, I can tell you what doesn't work, but I can't really pinpoint what does work. So often, you know, we had a good amount of mix time, which was helpful because we got to go back over scenes maybe two or three times before we landed on a space where he could go, okay, this is really there. It might need some tweaking or some little adds here and there, or maybe we could flesh it out a bit more, but the idea is there. So let's move on. And, you know, like I said, that was the most amount of freedom that I've seen so far in my career working on a mixed stage. And I could only hope there's more opportunities like that, because it really is where we just turn into like kids with a bunch of sounds on a mixed stage, trying to make the scariest scenes possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were, say, to be at an event, like a convention or something, and someone came up and said, I want to do what you're doing, how would you suggest they get started from an educational point, from a, you know, what jobs to look at point?
Want me to go?
Yeah, go for it, Brett.
So it's tough being a mixer, because we're the ones that work in the room, and we, you know, we have the big speakers and the big screen and the big console to mix on. It's very hard to get started. I would say start editing, like start sound editing, because it's a little easier to get started, a lower cost to entry. And then start mixing small projects on your own, like find your peers. There's always students who are making their first films too, and they're looking for other people to collaborate. That's kind of how I ended up coming up. I didn't have a very traditional route where you work at a facility and you kind of assist and then you graduate positions. I kind of just started doing it by myself and messing it up horribly for years. But it was, you know, I'm not messing up any big projects. I'm messing up other people's things that they've equally messed up, because we're all just learning, and it was a great environment to be vulnerable in.
Yeah.
And then you start to pick up things, and that gets you opportunities, which then you start working with people with more experience and you start learning from them. And, you know, it's just trying to get, the only way to do it is to do it. Mm-hmm. You can't sit in a room and watch somebody and get any better at it, unfortunately. Like, there are certain jobs you can shadow and learn. Sound mixing isn't one of them. So I would say just get into it and start getting your 10,000 or 100,000 hours, whatever you need. Just start, find hour one and keep going would be my advice.
Yeah. And, you know, all of the things Brett said really applies to sound design as well. I'd say number one, make sure you want it. I teach a course and I really start off with that, because it is such a specific area. You know, getting into filmmaking is one thing, but then choosing which avenue or branch you want to get into, is you have to fully dedicate yourself to that craft. Because in any sort of a stream within filmmaking, it takes so much energy, mental energy, even physical energy sometimes. So, and even the ladder to climb to get to those positions can be long. So number one, if you want to be a sound designer, make sure you love it enough to go through the process to get there. And if you do, it's a lot of fun. You know, there's this funny saying that, like, you spend, and it's probably just in the sort of film world that we say this, because it is sort of a nuanced craft, or a niche craft, sorry, is that you spend like 3 or 4 years in university or college to get an interview, which is kind of true, because most of what I learned was when I did get my foot in the door. School was great, but it bought me an interview with Sounddogs Toronto, which is the company I'm still with. And from there, I just was able to be a fly on the wall and start doing odd jobs for people. And then you start to build trust amongst the supervisors and designers that you want to fill. And you eventually, you know, that responsibility works up to, hey, just take this show. It's yours. I think you know enough now, and you've been around enough to do this.
Mm-hmm. And to add to it too, my first mentor, who was a mixer, and I started mixing with him to make sure I liked mixing, he made me do everything. He made me dialogue edit. He made me sound effects edit, mix dialogue, mix effects, go do Foley, go do some on-set sound. And there were things like, for me, production sound on set, you know, 1 hour in and I'm looking at my watch, like the days are so long. But mixing, I can sit and be like, oh, it's 3 p.m. I forgot to get up and go eat lunch. Like mixing is the thing that time just disappears and I love it. And I've never gotten sick of it. So that would be, I guess, another thing is, you know, if post-production sound is what you're interested in, there's a lot of different jobs in post-production sound. So like Dash said, make sure the one you have, you really want to do it. You're going to have to spend a lot of time doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Because even, you know, like Brett said, to say I want to be in film sound, within that, there are, you know, for the sake of conversation, 10 different avenues to go in. But each of those avenues requires so much dedication that you can't really double up on two of them, because once you get really good at one, that's what you get known for. And that's what you get hired for. And to get really good at one of those crafts takes a serious amount of time.
Nice. Well, I want to thank both of you for your insights and sharing your experiences today. Are there places online where people can follow your work?
I think IMDb is probably the best place for me as an editor.
Yeah, same. I have brettkaloran.com and all the typical social media, but I'm usually just posting things that I've added to my IMDb. It's the most easily laid out, clearest way to see what I've done and what I'm doing next.
Awesome.
Often that's what I'll send first. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I will have links to what I can find for you guys. Again, thank you.
Thanks, Summer. Thank you, Summer. Yeah, it's appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. We're continuing our deep dive into making Resident Evil. Welcome to Raccoon City. And with me now is Dev Singh, the film editor, the person, the one hand who put together what we're seeing on the screen now. Hi, Dev.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty good. I have to ask, are you a horror fan?
You know, I am. It's come my way as a result of doing a lot of horror. I did a movie backcountry in, I think, 2014 or so. I was always sort of into, I kind of got into like French New Extremity stuff, like Gaspar Noé and Claire Denis, Trouble Every Day and stuff. And that was kind of my entree into it. Although I remember watching on DVDs, like, you know, John Carpenter stuff and Hellraiser and everything. And they scared the hell out of me, actually. So I kind of steered a little clear of that for a while. And then while I was in film school, I was kind of more into like independent and then, you know, foreign movies and stuff as you're trying to like develop yourself as a, at that time I wanted to be a director. And I kind of found myself in editing as a result of just being like just interested in movies, but also I liked the creative energy of the edit room. It's really quiet. Like it's not such a hustle out on, you know, when you're crew and you're on set, it's like, you're just trying to get stuff. But in editing, you can actually kind of sit and have some time with it. And I liked that. It just suited my personality just to slow down a little bit. And so I just found myself doing that a lot more. And then was like, yeah, maybe I could make a career out of this. This sounds like fun. And that way, horror became a little bit bigger in that, like, not bigger than you know, the John Carpenter days or anything like that. But as a result of sort of meeting some directors that were really into horror, I kind of came up because they liked how I cut tension. It was just like kind of thrillers. Mm-hmm. And that kind of extended moment of tension I remember the for Backcountry, the director sort of interviewing me, and I was like, okay, I gotta like really work hard, try and get this job. I really hope I get it. And Adam McDonald, the director, was sat down and we were just having like a coffee meeting. And he's like, so if you want this movie, you've got it. I saw this short film that I had done in film school. And he was like, you cut tension really well. I'd like you to be my editor. And I was like, really? Okay. So then I got to do it. And this was like a really small contained story in the woods. And he really wanted it. He is a horror aficionado. And he dug deep into horror. And we categorized this as more like a survival thriller than a horror, but it had horror elements to it. And that started sort of my real learning about horror and my real sort of love of it, because, you know, for film, it's like one of the last places that you really have cinema, you know, shot making. There's the high sort of level independent films and things, but in horror, they're all shot makers and lighting, and that tone and pacing that you can play with as an editor in horror, it's a real place to shine a bit. And so, you know, I love doing it now. Like, it's like a blast.
It sounds
like... Even when I cut drama, I cut like a horror movie. You know?
Yeah, it sounds like you were a latent storyteller. You just didn't realize it until you started editing other people's stories.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's so fun. This is how I came about it. I was a real fan of like Cassavetes and this and Hal Ashby and these guys that had this approach, this philosophical approach to filmmaking. And I kind of got into that part. Like Hal Ashby had this story where he would be, you know, up on Big Sur and he was like an editor too. Right. And there are a couple of stories with him, but one of them was like him sitting there going like, everybody's kind of working hard and he sits down and he talks to everybody and is like, you know, is there anything else that you'd ever rather do than do this? And that sentiment sort of fits in with all this work that I get to do. It's like when I'm sitting there doing it, it is just a lot of fun. It's hard, but it's like this intricacy of how you build tension, how you build a scare. Do you do a jump scare? Do you kind of flow off of that and make it just sort of natural? So when a scare comes later, you can kind of like play it out like it's unexpected. And those kinds of things are like a lot of fun to play with. And you're kind of just feeling it all out as you go and watching it over and over again and just seeing if it resonates. As you're working with the director, the director's always got the vision. Like Johannes had such a great vision for this film, like humor and fun. Like he would always talk about this guy, Jim Steinman, who's a producer of I was researching what Johannes was into, and he was into like in Strangers Pray at Night, he was Bonnie Tyler and he used it so well. It was like crazy. And I was like noticing, like, you know, this is a lot of songs by this producer, Jim Steinman. And then we talked, we were just in the room and I was like, you know, I'm gathering that you really love this dude. And he's like, oh, he's like my favorite. So once I figured that out, that was like, we started finding and really vibing on a good energy together, which was like, he had this, I think he stole this statement from Jim Steinman, which was like, if you see the edge, you have to go over it. Why ever even get near the edge? The edge is like past it. So every decision that we'd make, everything that we'd try would be way out there. And half the time we were just surprised that, you know, the studio and our producers would let us get away with it. You know, and then they got really into it. You know, that's how we got Mark Corvin as a composer. And he just went nuts with his stuff. You know, he's got this great history in horror, like The Witch and Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm. So how closely do you work with the director, like for Raccoon City? Were you on the set watching him make shots, or did you sit with him before you started cutting things together to get his impression of the feel of what he wanted the movie to feel like?
You know, it's interesting. I think it starts with like, just, I came because I had no history with the production company or Johannes. I had done a movie called Incident in a Ghostland, which was Pascal Laugier's fourth film, I think. And it was a great job. I got to go to Paris and hang out with him and do this movie. And as a result of that interview, I got a chance to interview for this. And Johannes and I just got along. I think we did that initial one, and I could feel the Assault on Precinct 13, the Carpenter kind of vibe that he had going. Mm-hmm. I also kind of thought this Claire story, as it tied to the video game, I just started talking more about the feel of the movie. And I really liked the first half. You know, I like how it just is a slow build, almost like a Western horror. And I think he just liked that. So him and I started talking, and I wasn't on set. Usually an editor, sometimes they're on set, sometimes they're not, but they were a little bit further away from me. I was based in Toronto, and they shot, but he would send me just a FaceTime personal video, like on WhatsApp. And he would just sort of film himself talking about how the day went, what he wanted to do in the day. I got all these location scouting videos beforehand, so I got to get a sense of where the production was going to go. I had the script, so I had that as my template. And then him just talking to me every morning and every day. Every day he'd go to set, we'd do a video chat call. And then every night he would just download some of his thoughts, what he liked, what he didn't, what he felt like we needed. And I would be, the next day I'd get the dailies, which are that day's shot, footage shot, and I would cut it together. And then I would send it to him to take a look at. And then we'd have a discussion about some scenes that were like what we wanted to do with it. He's so collaborative as a person, like with the entire crew, that with the production designer, with visual effects, with me, with sound, that he encourages that communication. And so that it makes you really feel involved and collaborating on every decision that he makes. And then when he finished shooting, I put together the first sort of cut with music and sound effects and everything. And then we watch that, and then we start finding his intention. So from that point on, we're together every day for the next like 4 or 5, almost 6 months.
And I have to ask, are you the person responsible for putting together the blooper reels?
No, I'm not. Fortunately, I don't do that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Describe.
Although I do collect some of the material sometimes. This is hilarious.
I am a huge fan. Like when stuff comes out on Blu-ray, I'm a huge fan of the gag reels. I am a huge fan of the commentary tracks, which are getting fewer and farther between. And that's so sad, because like doing these interviews, it's a time to dig a little deeper off onto tangents on what the people were thinking when they were making what we're watching. And I miss the prevalence, just how many different discs would have commentary tracks on them. But that's for another discussion.
I know, that's funny though, it's true, because I was very much into, that's how I learned a lot of stuff. Like that was a supplement to school, you know, learned how Fincher did stuff, learned how the editor did it, learned how, you know, Ren Kleiss did sound design. Like it was just a place where you could learn about everybody.
So what got you onto that path in film school? What was the inspiration, or I guess the realization when you said, I like directing, but I'd rather do editing?
Well, yeah, it's funny, because in the first day that I was there, I think I had read something about, you know, Scorsese and David Lean and stuff, how they were editors first. And I had read some quote somewhere that editing taught you how to be a great director, and that editing was sort of what made cinema its art. So all those things that kind of come in. My last name starts with an S. So when we do our introductions, like basically the first day of film school, you're like, everybody says writer, director, writer, director, writer, director. And I think just being a little, you know, mischievous and spiteful, I said editor, you know, and as a result of that, everybody just asked me to edit their work. Wow. So I made a lot of friends editing. And then I just discovered that it suited me. After film school, I directed a little bit. I did some shorts, got some grants, and was into sort of like kind of weirdo things. And I was like, oh, I want to try this and this. And I found that what I liked best in when I was doing work was the editing. That was the most fun for me. And after I would be a PA and things. And then I just thought, you know what? I'm going to go with that idea. So I went back into editing and I was an assistant editor for a few years. And then I wanted to work on some bigger scale movies, and that was in visual effects. So I started getting into visual effects, and I worked for a couple of companies doing that and a little bit of freelance. I worked for Mr. X here in Toronto. And then I realized that actually I like the storytelling. Like I really do love editing. And then I kind of pushed forward to doing that. And then somehow I found my way here.
Now, would you ever want to write, direct, and edit your own films?
I don't think so. Like, I love editing so much, and I really love the craft that's involved, and I like collaborating with people. And I like when, you know, a director and production designer and cinematographer and sound team are all together. And we're talking about ideas and influences, like, and I get to learn. I get a whole a few months usually just to dig into their interests. And I find that really gratifying, like art, literature, films, you know, whatever the directors have used as their influence, I like to like discover that. So, you know, that's how I learn more about filmmaking. Like, I like Johannes's favorite Exorcist is like Exorcist 3. You know? Okay. So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go watch that. Like he has this energy to him, and different directors all have that. And I get into that. Like, so, you know, Pascal Augier was a big fan of, you know, 20s and 30s movies and Italian giallo, so Argento. And I would watch all of Argento's work. And then kind of see that those parallels and kind of get to draw in some timing and tone within how I edit something, you know? And then I'm just watching other things that I like as well. So it's melding all these different ideas into feeling like the rhythm of what that director wants to do. So like in one of the scenes that we did in Resident Evil, like Johannes actually, like I cut it. And I sent it to him, and it was kind of like a really sweet comment, because it was, he goes, you know, I would never have cut that scene that way, but it's really good, you know, and it pretty much stayed that way into the final edit. And so we would just, he would like, you know, if I would do something and see a different way of doing it, he was really open to seeing that. And as you develop with all these other directors, I can sort of steal little pieces and things that I've learned along the way and incorporate them into how I try and do things. Like, and most of it is just, what's the most interesting way to build tension? You know, that's, to me, that's horror. And it's also comedy. You know, it's kind of mm-hmm. everything. It's like, how long do you hold this shot? What's that trigger moment where people expect it, and can you hold it longer than that? And sometimes do you do it a little quicker? Sometimes do you make the rhythm of the scene feel very, very natural, you know? So it doesn't even feel like you're setting anybody up for anything.
Nice. So what do you read or watch when it's your downtime and you're just looking for a little entertainment to sort of decompress with?
Oh, well, I don't know, a lot of it is probably just influenced by what's out there. So, like, I'm reading this book, Paul Thomas Anderson book, because I think, like, Licorice Pizza is coming has out. So I was like, oh, I'm interested in that. So a critic that I like, Adam Neiman, wrote this book. He's written a few, like, on Fincher and the Coen brothers and Ben Wheatley. And they're all, you know, I like Ben Wheatley. His latest movie was crazy. And Kill List is insane. You know, this is a folk horror, like amazing folk horror stuff. And I was kind of interested. So I just, this is the latest thing. And so then I just dig into, like, everything I can learn about Paul Thomas Anderson. So the way that his book is set out is, like, the first movie is There Will Be Blood. So I just recently watched that again. And then the writer has a tie to, like, 2001. And I start watching it with that interest. Like, oh yeah, you know what? There is. I can feel that in the music and how the, you know, and then I go watch 2001 and then The Treasure of Sierra Madre. And then a friend of mine tells me about a film noir movie. So I go watch Persona. And then I'll watch, like, you know, an Argento film, or I'll watch Suspiria, you know, the new one. And then I'll watch the old one. And then I'll go down a line of all Argento movies. You know, it kind of just drifts everywhere. But I just get really interested in that stuff. Lately, a lot of it is pertains to the work that I'm into. Like, right now I'm doing a show called The Porter, which is based on a sleepaway car train porters in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And they formed a union. So it was based on a book, They Call Me George. And this is sort of this other, this history of the first Black union. So, you know, I'm listening to that. I think I'm reading another book called The Changeling. And then I start, like, watching all Stephen Queen movies, Barry Jenkins, you know, Spike Lee. And then I start listening to, like, and then, you know, for that, I'll go off and I'll start listening to, you know, oh, there's this style of music that is for the period. But what if I took, like, Gasoffelstein from Disorder and put that into it, because it would have this totally different energy. And I just start playing with those ideas and just seeing, like, how they collide with each other. Things that seem very disparate. And I like doing that. Like, I like, so, you know, in that way, horror has influenced this thing that I'm doing right now, which is very much a period drama. And fortunately, nice. The directors are like, I like that. That's crazy. You know. Sorry, I'm very rambly. I'm sorry.
That's fascinating, because it probably is reflective of your creative style, how you're working on one thing, but you're thinking about how it connects to the parts before it, after it, and later, and keeping all that, you know, together in your head. You know, hey, that's, yeah. You know, following the disparate pieces wherever they happen to be floating in your brain at the time. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. And that part is really fun, because it's like you find connections. And ideally, that's what you try and make some things unique, you know, and bring something to your director so that the director is seeing something that they can't, like, they have their idea and their intention and their vision for sure. And you slide right into that intention. But the more other things that you can bring to it, the more ideas of sound and principles of sound, like Brett and Dash on this was like, I would ask them stuff. We would talk back and forth. We're friends, you know? So I'm like, we're just sharing information, learning, like, how can I get better at this? You know, how can I think of new ideas? How can I build concepts and things within it so that the next thing and the next thing, and I get to work with directors again and show them, like, what we're all capable of, and giving some energy and voice to their work. You know, they have it, obviously. They're the visionaries. But the more ideas I feel like that you can give a director, you know, and the more takes that you could do off of it, it just creates a very vibrant energy. And that's kind of the room that I like to have, like a room where you're free to experiment. And Like, I don't think that anything that I do is the right or the wrong way. I just think it's trying something. And then you try another thing. And if you're very open to trying anything, you'll discover the synthesis and a new idea somewhere in there. If you shut yourself off to this, these ideas, like, oh, that won't work, you're shutting yourself off to something that's that potential, you know? And I like that idea of exploring the potential of the material for as long as they'll let me.
Nice.
I think we're talking about Resident Evil, so I'll talk mostly about that. because it was a lot of fun. Also, it was like a scale up for me too. Like I hadn't done a movie of that size before, and I found it a lot of fun. Like Spiral was a little bit smaller, a little bit more self-contained. Plus it was within the language of the Saw franchise. Whereas Resident Evil, while it was kind of like, oh, let's do a new take on this. Let's do a different take. And that was really Johannes's and Robert's, Calzer, the creative head, and Alex Westmore's sort of concept of this. Like, we're going to try and make this a little different, you know? And that was really fun to explore with them. So this was like so tied in with the video games.
Nice.
So, well, at least the video game 1 and 2.
Are you a big fan of video games in general?
Yes, I am. I like it. It's like an interesting way. Again, it's the storytelling that you were talking about before. Like, there's all these forms of storytelling, you know? We still haven't reached literature at all. Like, literature is so much more advanced and how it can make time jumps and things. I think we've been trying to lean into that for like 50 years or something, but haven't actually fully been able to be as experimental as literature can be. But video games have that other idea, that idea that you can build a universe, you know, a completely contained universe that you follow a path through. And that self-actualizing part of it is really interesting to me.
Nice. Well, Dev, I would like to talk to you literally all day, but you are a busy man, and I do want to thank you for sharing your insights and your passion on storytelling and editing today.
Yeah, thank you. I had a really good time, Simon. Thanks very much.
Dev Singh, the film editor for Resident Evil, welcome to Raccoon City, which I believe you can still catch right now. And go enjoy it. Enjoy Dev's work. Enjoy Brett and Dash's work. And we'll be back with more Slices Sci-Fi right after this. Slice of Sci-Fi.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's surveillance fatigue has you covered, in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up, because it's story time.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And one more time, their work is in the movie Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, as well as some of the other ones we mentioned. This type of stuff fascinates me, just how the soundscapes can make or break a horror movie, or even a sci-fi feature. Space opera. Do you go with sound in space, or do you not go with sound in space? Either way, this type of interview was a lot of fun for me, and I hope it was fun for you. You have any questions or comments, let me know. Send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com, or come on by the website, leave a comment in the comment section for this episode. Get that conversation started. And yeah, you can hit me up on Twitter @sliceofscifi, because I am not adverse to conversations on Twitter. I don't get over there as much as I should, probably, because I'm working to make content for you guys. But yeah, I will definitely answer questions for the Slice of Sci-Fi Twitter, the Babylon Podcast Twitter, definitely. So check those out. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review or a rating. Let people know you are enjoying the podcast here, and maybe, just maybe, they'll enjoy it themselves. And you can also leave a rating or a review for us over on Podchaser. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support the efforts here at Slice of Sci-Fi and all of the other shows and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal and Ko-fi really do help keep the lights on around here, so I thank you for your support. If you'd like to add your support to these efforts, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier, and you will become eligible for perks. There are currently a large stack of books, of DVDs, of Blu-rays, of 4Ks, review materials that I get in, and I don't have the space to keep all of it. So you guys, my supporters, you get first dibs on the good stuff. And if you want to support without diving into the perks pool, there is a way to choose a support tier and exclude yourself from the perks. Apparently that stopped working and I have to go back in there and reconfigure the tiers again, but that is possible. You can also leave donations through PayPal, paypal.me/scifisummer, and through Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi. And again, I thank you all for your support. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.